Good evening, Mr. Dickens.
This is indeed a great honor.
Please welcome Mr. Charles Dickens.
I'd like to entertain you with a story of ghosts. Ghosts past, ghosts present, ghosts yet to come.
Mend your way, boy.
You'll have to see the film to find out the rest.
Humbug!
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCrescia.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. I think today will be interesting in see how long we can make the episode go.
Our goal is to match the running time of the movie, I believe. Is the
wow, that's a stretch.
Well, it's a very short movie.
That's true.
So there's that at least. But look, look, guys, we're going to be honest. 2001, not a great year for Nicolas Cage movies.
Not so much.
Not so much. It was a great year for Space Odysseys.
True.
But not so much for Cage movies. After appearing in the dull wartime romance Captain Corelli's Mandolin, Nicolas Cage next appeared in his very first animated film, which was an adaptation of one of the most beloved stories of all time. That film was called Christmas Carol the Movie, and boy, is it rough.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
It is a tough watch, I got to say. And it's only 80 minutes long, and you think, okay, this can't be that bad. It's in and out as quickly as possible, but it feels a lot longer than 80 minutes. Now, you guys all know A Christmas Carol, so I won't bore you with the details of A Christmas Carol. It's the Charles Dickens story that's been adapted to film probably hundreds of times at this point. Although it was never better than 1992's Muppets Christmas Carol.
Correct.
That is the peak Christmas Carol story.
Definitive Christmas Carol.
I did argue a couple weeks ago when we mentioned that we were discussing this movie that while I didn't expect this movie to be very good, the fundamental building blocks of A Christmas Carol I think are so strong that it's pretty much compelling no matter who adapts it. And that's why everyone adapts it, because it's a very easy story to do. You know, it's something that is just, you know, it's a guaranteed pathos out of that story, you know? And this is a movie that was made on a budget of about 6 million British pounds. Which I tried to convert it into American dollars, and I had to adjust it for inflation and everything like that. So I converted to about $8 to $9 million in 2001. 2001 American dollars, about $8 to $9 million. If I did my math correctly, which I probably did not.
thereabouts.
Yeah, around there. And I believe it was released in theaters in Britain, and it might have even gotten a small theatrical release in the U.S., but this is a movie that screams direct-to-video.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah.
It is the kind of film that a substitute teacher would play for a classroom because they accidentally forgot the movie they were supposed to play.
That is the exact note I wrote down also.
Is it really?
Yeah, so this feels like something you would watch in elementary school on a half day.
Yep. 100%. What sets this movie apart, though, is the talent assembled to make it and the voice cast that they gathered for it. It is nothing short of mind-boggling that some of these people are involved in this movie, Mike. Obviously, Nicolas Cage is in this because we're talking about it on this podcast. And he portrays Jacob Marley. Ebenezer Scrooge is played by Simon Callow, a British character actor known for roles in films like Amadeus and Shakespeare in Love. Freaking Kate Winslet is in this movie.
Yeah.
Playing Belle, Scrooge's old girlfriend. Jane Horrocks from the British TV series Absolutely Fabulous plays the Ghost of Christmas Past. And then you've got Michael freaking Gambon, Albus Dumbledore, playing the Ghost of Christmas Present. Rice Ifans plays Bob Cratchit, and he's probably best known for playing the Lizard in The Amazing Spider-Man. He was also Xenophilius Lovegood in the Harry Potter and Deathly Hallows, and he had a recurring role in Elementary. Juliet Stevenson from films like Truly Madly Deeply and Bend It Like Beckham plays Mrs. Cratchit. Robert Llewellyn, who was also the writer of this movie, was also the star of the British comedy series Red Dwarf, stars as Old Joe. And Kate Winslet's sister, Beth Winslet, plays Fan, who is Kate Winslet's character's sister in this movie, I believe. And then Colin McFarlane, who plays Commissioner Loeb in Batman Begins and The Dark Knight, plays Albert Fezziwig. If you remember Commissioner Loeb, I think he dies in The Dark Knight. That's why Gordon becomes Commissioner.
Right.
He plays Fezziwig. And Keith Wickham, who plays pretty much everyone on Thomas the Tank Engine besides Thomas, plays Mr. Leech. He plays the rest of the tank engines. The series is called Thomas and Friends, and he plays all of the friends, I believe, is his job. And as mentioned before, Robert Llewellyn plays Old Joe. He also co-wrote the movie, along with Piet Kroon, who has served as an art director on several major films, including The Iron Giant, Shrek 2, and Despicable Me. And the movie was directed by Jimmy T. Murakami, who has been involved with several animated films, including one that sounds really great called When the Wind Blows, which is about an elderly couple building this nuclear fallout shelter.
My God, what?
It's supposed to be very good. I haven't heard of it before now, but I kind of want to check it out. And he was a supervising director on The Snowman, one of the most well-known animated short films ever. Are you familiar with The Snowman, Mike? You probably know it, I think, if you saw it.
Yeah, I don't know that title off the top of my head.
But it's the little boy and like this kind of big snowman that comes to life, and they're flying all over the city, and it's like this wistful animation.
Yes, I do know. Yep.
He was a supervising director on that. But what really blew my mind, Mike, was when I discovered that Jimmy T. Murakami, the director of this movie, also used to work for Roger Corman in the 70s.
Wow.
And even ended up directing the 1980 Roger Corman-produced cult classic Battle Beyond the Stars.
Okay.
So are you familiar with Battle Beyond the Stars at all, Mike?
I don't think I am, no.
Okay. Let's just say it's a knockoff of both Star Wars and The Magnificent Seven. It's written by John Sayles. It's got a score by James Horner, and it has special effects by James Cameron.
What?
And I've never seen it, but it's been at the top of my list for a while because I want that all up in my eyeballs.
That sounds amazing.
Right? That's pretty insane. So I was like shocked to find out that the director of this movie was also the director of Battle Beyond the Stars, which is like, you know, prime cult 80s movie.
Right.
Direct-to-video animated Christmas British movie. but probably the biggest impact that Christmas Carol the movie had on popular culture was not in the form of the film itself, obviously, but rather its theme song, the song What If, which plays incredibly abruptly towards the end of this movie.
I think I noticed, yeah.
And then it plays again during the credits. It was actually sung by Kate Winslet. And ended up being a top 10 hit in Europe with all proceeds going to charity. I watched the music video for this song, which shows Kate Winslet in an old Victorian house singing this song, and there's a ghost there, and then it's intercut with footage from this movie. Not a good video, I gotta tell you. but if you love extreme close-ups of half of Kate Winslet's face, then it has those in spades.
Then you got that going for you.
Yeah, which is nice. And so there's no real plot synopsis for this on IMDb.
No, there's not.
No, there is not. But since it's a Christmas Carol, I'm going to assume you know the story anyway. But I am going to read you what IMDb does have instead of plot synopsis. It's about a paragraph long, but I think it's hilarious because it is particularly enamored with one character specifically. And before we get into it, Mike, did your version of this start with the live action portion?
No, it did not.
Okay, neither did mine. Okay, so mine was just strictly animated, and I guess yours was too. I guess in some versions of this movie, it's bookended with live action sequences in which Simon Callow, who plays Scrooge, also plays Charles Dickens, and he's like introducing the movie. And I believe that's him narrating throughout the movie as well, at the beginning and end. So we did not have those live action sequences, but this description references the live action sequence. And so it goes like this. And again, this is weirdly enamored with one character in this movie. The film begins with a live-action sequence set in Boston in 1857, the site of a live reading by renowned novelist Dickens. As he begins his quote-unquote story of ghosts, a woman in the audience screams because she has seen a mouse. And Dickens points out that this is appropriate, since his story begins with a mouse. At this point, the story turns into the animated version, and Dickens explains that the mouse, named Gabriel, carries a glimmer of hope amidst the glaring coexistence of rich and poor in the streets of London. Throughout the subsequent unfolding of the well-known story, Gabriel acts as a miniature Greek chorus, providing younger members of the audience with a point of entry into the story, and in the case of the potentially frightening elements, the ghosts of past, present, and future, a place of refuge.
Sure. That's a lot to read into a mouse.
Yeah, I gotta tell you, without those live action segments, I did not get that out of this.
Nope, not at all.
Out of that mouse character. So, Mike, what were your overall thoughts on Christmas Carol, the movie?
This definitely is, it's a pretty basic, I think, adaptation. That's a strong word to use for what this movie is. For A Christmas Carol, it's pretty much just the regular story. But it's good enough, I guess. It definitely feels like a like Sunday afternoon TV PBS special, like kind of thing, right? Like, yeah. It's kind of shocking to see this, or to think about that this movie came out in 2001, and this animation looks like it's from the early 80s or something like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, how well do you know A Christmas Carol? Like, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it before in several other forms.
I've seen it other forums. I think I have read it before in high school at some point. I'm not very I don't know all the quotes and stuff. Like, I can't refer you to pages, but I'm pretty familiar with it, I think, as I'm sure most people are.
Yeah.
And just in general, I thought it was like a TV movie for BBC or something like that.
That would make more sense.
Yeah. And it definitely has that feel. Like we both mentioned, it feels like something that your substitute teacher would play during class in elementary school or something like that.
Yeah,
like you said, the cast is pretty good, or is really good. The performances are good enough for what this movie seems to be.
Right.
It just kind of exists, I guess.
Yeah, I will say, I mean, for their part, I the voice cast is not phoning it in, and I thought they would.
Oh yeah,
you know, like looking at this, I was like, oh man, the voice acting is going to be terrible, but the voice cast is actually pretty solid, and Kate Winslet's actually quite good. I think she's actually like very expressive in this role, which surprised me. Like, I like Kate Winslet. I think she's very good in pretty much everything, but it surprised me because this seemed like such a quick paycheck, big name actress voiceover gig. You know,
right.
I thought it would be like if you ever played the Spider-Man 2 video game, Kirsten Dunst reprises her role from the movie in that game. But you can tell, like, you can tell in her voice that she's like half in that studio and half out. Like, she is out the door as she's recording those lines.
Yeah. Everyone knows the best part of Spider-Man 2, the video game, is Bruce Campbell's narration, Mike.
That's true. And he's great. But I'm
saying, and he's amazing.
That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about bad voice acting gigs.
We should have done Bruce Campbell for this podcast, Mike.
I mean, you're not wrong.
For season 3, after the Kurt Russell season.
The Kurt Russell season? That's what you're jumping to? What about the Keanu Reeves season, man?
Oh, man. We got a lot. Anyway.
Yeah. So in 2050, when we get to the Bruce Campbell podcast. but yeah, like, I was expecting, you know, Kirsten Dunst and Spider-Man 2 level bad just because I, you know, didn't think that this seems like such a second thought. Like a
right.
Like I can't imagine how they got Kate Winslet in this movie. You know?
Yeah.
And so just by virtue of her being in the movie, I was like, well, she's not going to give it her all, but she's actually quite good in the movie. Also, Michael Gambon's great as always. And Rice Ifans as Bob Cratchit gets my one big laugh in the movie, which is at the very end where he shows up at Scrooge's doorstep after Scrooge has changed, as Scrooge has the two mice on a soldier on his shoulder. And Bob Cratchit is like, you know, like Scrooge is messing with him and he's like acting very angry, and Bob Cratchit's like very apologetic, and he's like, looks at Scrooge and is like, sir, there's two mice in your shoulder. Just like very like point blank, and Scrooge is like, I know there's two mice on my shoulder.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, but I will say this movie takes significant liberties with the Christmas Carol story, I think, and in doing so, I think it kind of messes up what fundamentally works about A Christmas Carol.
Okay.
So Scrooge, like I read Christmas Carol when I was in probably like junior high. I've seen a lot of different versions of this in like play productions and in movies and stuff like that. And I think Scrooge, to me, is like the very definition of a dynamic character. It's the entire story is supposed to be about his journey from old miserly crone to generous giving man. Right. That's the through line there. It's like a very like full circle kind of thing. And instead, you know, this movie spends a ridiculous amount of time following Belle, Kate Winslet's character. And I mean, like, I get it. Like, if you somehow got Kate Winslet in your crappy little movie, you want to utilize her as much as possible. But
that's true.
But, you know, this is a story in which no other character, like, grows or changes, really, except for Scrooge. So why are we following anyone else? You know?
That's, yeah, okay, that's fair. That's a good point.
And even that, like, you know, in most versions of the story, Belle is not in the present-day timeline. She's just in the Ghost of Christmas Past sections, and that's where we leave her.
Right.
And so, you know, to spend a half hour of this movie's runtime before any of the haunting stuff happened, just on this Belle character who isn't even supposed to be there anymore, it's mind-boggling. It's fine if you want to change things around or whatever, but like there's one dynamic character in this entire story, and it's Scrooge.
Right.
And the less time we spend with that character, the less time you have on a story that's actually engaging. You know,
where anything's happening.
Exactly. And yeah, and you mentioned before the animation in this movie is it's so dull. Unexpressive, like, and you know, sometimes it comes alive. There are like actually sequences in this movie where the animation gets like really like weird and trippy. And
yep.
I'll talk about that.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
I'll talk about that in a little bit. But it's not quite often enough to make it feel worth it. You know, and this is an 80-minute movie that takes 13 minutes to mention Christmas for the first time.
Yep.
You know, I was like, I think I texted you as I was watching it. I was like, it's been 10 minutes watching a Christmas Carol movie and they haven't mentioned Christmas once. Like, what is happening?
What is this movie?
And then it takes 30 minutes for the Ghost of Christmas Past to show up. Like,
right.
You don't have a ton of time here with your 80 minutes. You know, you want the bulk of this runtime to be about Scrooge, you know, doing his Christmas Carol-y thing. But it takes 30 minutes for the Ghost of Christmas Past to show up. And there's still 20 minutes left after the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come leaves. So that collective 50 minutes probably covers like 10 pages of that book. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you only get 30 minutes or so of Scrooge, like going through his stuff. And the rest of it is spent on, establishing Scrooge as an even more evil bad guy than, he usually is portrayed as.
Yeah.
And also like showing how, Kate Winslet's, children's hospital is struggling. And then you have the last 20 minutes, which is him reconnecting with Kate Winslet and doing all this other stuff. But it's so drawn out, and it shouldn't be drawn out because it's an 80-minute movie.
You know? Somehow it still takes a long time to do anything.
Yeah. Like at least with the Muppets, like they have to sing songs, you know, it's entertaining.
They still do Muppet things.
They still do Muppet things. You know, I can watch Gonzo and Rizzo and be like, oh, it's Gonzo and Rizzo doing their thing. But yeah. And also, Scrooge has two mouse sidekicks in this version.
Sure, why not?
As we mentioned in the IMDb's little plot synopsis there, and yeah, that's like even like, you know, so we only get 30 minutes of Scrooge doing his Christmas Carol-y thing, and even parts of that time is eaten up by these stupid mouse sidekicks.
Yeah, to me that they were the mice were the. Like nail in the school day afternoon movie coffin, because they felt that's what, I mean, like, you know, I guess it is a kid's story, kid's movie type thing.
Sure.
What they're going for. But that was they were the characters that like would reminded me of like, you know, Davy and Goliath or something on PBS.
Yeah. I mean, they were like the Jar Jar Binks of Christmas Carol movies, you know, like they were like.
Such a crazy thing to, yeah, you're not wrong though.
Yeah, they were just so boring. They were just there strictly for, you know, comic relief for kids, and like they're not even funny. Like they're just kind of there,
yeah,
doing little mouse things. It's weird. It's a very odd choice. Now, we mentioned Nicolas Cage plays Jacob Marley in this movie. What did you think of Nicolas Cage in this movie for the 5 minutes that he's in it? You know,
for the maybe 5 minutes is would be a lot. It would be a high estimate if he's in this movie.
Yeah, but what did you think of Cage's performance in this movie, Mike?
That he is his voice performance is what I assumed the whole movie would be. But like what we were like just cashing it in. Okay. Like at least I felt that. I think he's at one point says, "Ooh, I'm a ghost." Like that's the voice he's using for all of his lines, which is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think this definitely felt like a cashing it in paycheck kind of movie for Cage, and I imagine it is for pretty much everybody involved.
But I got to read these five lines. Okay.
But, you know, he does get to act using spooky ghost voice. You know, he's doing his haunting thing and he gets out. Honestly, it's a less animated performance than some of his other performances that we've talked about on this podcast before. And this is the only one that's actually animated.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say the best part about Jacob Marley in this version is that he's chained to an army of other ghosts.
Yeah,
I think I laughed out loud at that reveal. I thought that was just really funny. Like, he's got.
And then they fly away into the sky.
Yeah, which I thought that was a nice touch. I feel like, you know, in every version of Christmas Carol, Jacob Marley is always has like all these chains on him, but we don't know what he's chained to. You know,
right.
He just has chains on him. And now you know that he's chained to several other Jacob Marleys.
Pretty much, yeah.
Or maybe they're just supposed to be regular ghosts, but still, like they all kind of look like Marley and they all kind of sound the same, so.
Yeah, they're all spooky ghosts.
Spooky ghosts, yeah. And he does pop up two more times throughout the movie. The first is when he shows up as a doorknob, which is always in the Christmas Carol thing.
Right.
You know, there's always like, you know, the doorknob turns into Marley for a second, and he's like, "Mend your ways," is what he says. And then he shows up once again during the Ghost of Christmas Future segment, which I don't think he usually does in most other Christmas Carol movies. And it shows the return of the ghost army that Jacob Marley is attached to. And he shouts like, "Look how time has wasted me."
It's the best. Like, but that's the real voice he's using, which makes it even funnier.
It's pretty great.
I wasted my days hoarding money, thinking about myself. I closed myself to the needs of my fellow man. Now I see the need, feel the want, unable to ignore, but incapable to help. Roaming, forever restless, in the upper winds. This time of year, oh, I suck the most. Listen, Ebenezer, you shall be haunted by three spirits. Expect the first when the bell tolls one.
Couldn't I see all three at once and have it over with? I'm a busy man, Jacob.
Oh, I know you are, Ebenezer. I see the weight and length of the chains you bear. You've worked on them hard the past 7 years. But it's not too late. You can still escape my fate. Grow, blossom, share, Ebenezer.
It's pretty entertaining. And I will say there is the doorknob thing kind of bothered me because they switch it around. Like normally what happens in these adaptations and in the book is that the doorknob thing happens first. Like that's the first Jacob Marley thing you see. It's like Scrooge on his way home from work and he sees the doorknob thing and it turns in, like he's on his way inside and his doorknob turns into Jacob Marley for a second and then it turns back. And it's a quick thing. It doesn't like shout anything at him. It just kind of turns in and then turns back, and he kind of like does like a double take and it's back into a doorknob, and he's able to kind of like dismiss it and think he's seeing things, he's going crazy or whatever, and then he goes inside and then he gets haunted by Jacob Marley, and I think that's more interesting because, you know, it's kind of building up to this haunting,
right?
And you know, there's sort of like guilt on his conscience because there's this haunting thing that's happening before the actual haunting. But then he dismisses it and it keeps going and it happens. And then in this version, the haunting happens before the doorknob thing. So the doorknob thing is just redundant. Like,
that's a good point.
Like, you know, we already saw the haunting. And so why is this doorknob thing happening? He already haunted him. He already told him, hey, you're going to be visited by three spirits and all that stuff that happens in his office in this version instead of in his bedroom. And then when he gets back to his house, the doorknob turns into Marley, and it's like, well, why? Like,
but why, though?
You already visited him. Like, why are you visiting him twice?
Yeah. He definitely, this Scrooge, I mean, I feel like he's probably always pretty calm, at least in the beginning of the hauntings. But in this one, it's super casual. He's just like, oh, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. Like he doesn't seem particularly phased that he's being haunted by these spirits.
Yeah.
Now, how do you think this role of Jacob Marley fits into the roles that we've seen Nicolas Cage play so far, Mike?
You know, I was thinking about this question while I was watching it, and I can't. I don't think there is, he's in it for 4 minutes. Like, it's not enough. I don't think there's enough substance there to talk about how it fits in.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair enough. I do have a few things that I can throw out there, though.
Sure.
It's not exactly the same, but there are shades of Christmas Carol in The Family Man, for sure.
That's true, yeah.
There's definitely parts of that. And we've seen Nicolas Cage play an otherworldly spirit before, Mike, in City of Angels.
Maybe, yeah, you recall. That's a good point. Yeah, true.
And he's also barely in this movie for more than a cameo, just like Never on Tuesday. That's what I got in answer of that question that I ask ourselves every week.
Good job.
Yeah, but yeah, and this is also, I mean, we talked about this before. This is I think this is the third Christmas movie that Nicolas Cage has starred in after Trapped in Paradise and The Family Man, so there's that as well. Were there any moments or scenes in this movie that stood out to you, Mike? Anything that you thought was good, anything you thought was terrible, like anything that just like stood out?
The most interesting is definitely The Ghost of Christmas Present. Yes. One, because it's Dumbledore, and two,
because it's Scrooge in the sky with diamonds.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect.
Yeah, that's such a weird sequence right there. That
makes no sense.
Yeah, it's a super trippy, like, weird sequence. You get like this different imagery and like this,
it's all technicolor,
and it's like and like the Christmas trees and shit is all flying at the screen, and it's like, what is happening? And I wish more of the movie was like that, because like that was pretty neat.
Yeah, I think it's funny that Ghost of Christmas Present is there to show Scrooge joy, and then we go on a drug trip.
Yeah, that was very odd. I did want to also mention a kind of neat like little detail about this movie. The Ghost of Christmas Past keeps changing appearance throughout her stay there. Like, so she keeps getting older and she keeps getting younger, like throughout the sequences. And I thought that was kind of interesting. Like, it, you know, it didn't like add that much, but like it was like a cool thing. And like animation wise, I'm sure that was probably annoying to do. So
yeah, it was a cool touch that they were able to do that with animation, right? Yeah. Like to have people changing ages and stuff.
I thought that was cool. Yeah, but I did want to say they do go out of their way to make Scrooge a lot more evil in this version, especially at the beginning. And even though they don't need to, like, Scrooge is a character who's, you know, he's pretty much perfectly set, right? Like, everybody knows Scrooge. You know, all you have to do is have him say, like, decrease the surplus population! And that's, like, you know, that's all you need to know about Ebenezer Scrooge, right? That he's okay with the poor dying because it will decrease the surplus population. Like, that line perfectly sums up everything about who Scrooge is at the beginning.
I have a better idea, Mike. Why don't we have a 10-minute montage of him having people locked up in debtor's prison? Maybe that will drive the point home.
Not only should we have a montage about him getting people locked up in debtor's prison, we should have him directly responsible for the death of Tiny Tim. Because that is what this movie does. Now, in other versions, he is kind of like indirectly responsible for the death of Tiny Tim, right? Because he's, you know, he doesn't pay Bob Cratchit enough and they weren't able to pay doctors to save his life, something like that.
Right.
In this movie, Tiny Tim is caroling outside Scrooge's office and Scrooge pours a bucket of water on him in the dead of winter, so it's freezing cold out. And he like throws a bucket of water, hits him with all the water, and then Tim catches pneumonia. And then in the Christmas future thing, he dies. Like, you know, and that always happens in the ghost in the Christmas future thing. But it's directly implied that Scrooge is the one who killed him because he gave Tiny Tim pneumonia after throwing water on him as he caroled. And I thought that was hilarious.
That's fair. It is.
That was a. Like I know this is a cartoon, but this is like a cartoonishly evil Scrooge.
Yeah, that Christmas future. I mean, Christmas future, I feel, is always the spookiest.
I mean, it's meant to be.
It's meant to be. Yeah, yeah. But this one, like that, you know, we have like the Raven God of Death appear over the family at Christmas dinner.
Yeah, fair. I don't know. When I think of the Ghost of Christmas Future, I always think of Mickey's Christmas Carol. You know, with the one with Scrooge McDuck as Ebenezer Scrooge, because The Ghost of Christmas Future, that movie in that like 30-minute short is, you know, it's like this guy in a cloak, and then it, like, at the very end, Scrooge McDuck is, like, looking over the gravestone. Look, spirit, spirit, who is that in the grave over there? And then he pulls the guy pulls his hood off, and it's Pete. And he's, like, smoking a giant cigar. He's like, why, it's yours, Ebenezer. And for some reason, that imagery always stuck with me, man. I don't...
yeah, clearly.
But yeah, in this one, it's like this weird, like, rave. Like, it's always like some version of death is the ghost of Christmas Future, I believe. But yeah, it's like this weird raven spirit. And it looks cool. Like, it looks neat.
It looks awesome, yeah.
But yeah, and I will... So that is weird. And I actually wanted to mention during that vision of Christmas Future, there is one moment that really made me laugh, which is when this is going to sound terrible. It's the, it's the moment when the Cratchit family is mourning Tiny Tim's death. And there's, you know, there's a montage of like their faces coming up on the screen saying different things they love about Tiny Tim. And like, I think the mom is like, oh, he loved Christmas so much. And like, somebody's like, he used to love caroling. And then Bob comes up and it's like, he loved to slide.
It's ridiculous.
I was just like, oh, that's a really weird thing to remember. That's your go-to. Tiny Tim loved to slide.
That was my number one.
Yeah, and this movie also, I mean, since we didn't have the live action scenes, I felt this movie began and ended very, very abruptly. Like, it came out of the opening credits. Like it said, Christmas Carol, the movie, it gave like a cast list, and there was no music or anything. So it was just like a title sequence. It's like Christmas Carol, the movie, listed a couple actors, and then it just started, and like the narration was already like speaking. And it was very like, whoa, okay. Like, that's all right. And then it ended very abruptly. I don't think they even said, you know, the most iconic line in A Christmas Carol, God bless us, everyone. I don't think they said that.
I don't think so either, yeah.
It might have been in one of the live-action sequences that was cut, like the one at the end, maybe, but...
maybe, I don't know.
It's definitely not in the just animated version, so that was odd. And that's like, you know, how do you not have that? And, like, maybe it was in the live-action version, so I won't harp on that, but, like, you know, it's one of the most universally recognized lines in all of fiction, but maybe it's there. Maybe it's not. Who knows? This is a revisionist take on Christmas Carol. still, you know, I know Christmas Carol pretty well. I'm a fan of Decrease the Surplus Population. I think it's a great line. And, you know, I do know, like, specific lines from A Christmas Carol that are just, like, in the cultural consciousness that, like, I use a lot. Like, I use Decrease the Surplus Population a lot just as a joke. My friend and I
as a joke. Uh-huh, Mike.
I didn't tell you I'm working for the Trump administration now.
Oh, yeah.
I've been using that line a lot. But I also use the line, this line didn't make the cut of this movie, actually, but towards the end of the movie, there's the part where Scrooge, like, awakens from his, you know, dreams, and he's shouting out at the boy who's building a snowman. And it's like, you boy, go down and get a Christmas goose. And in most versions, he will say, go to the shop and get a Christmas goose, the biggest one in the shop. And the boy will shout back, the one as big as me. And I don't know. I've said that line a lot. I enjoy that line a lot. But it's not in here, so the hell with this movie.
So this movie's dumb.
And also, I will say, in most versions, I feel like there's some level of ambiguity as to whether Scrooge's visions actually happened. Right? Like, you know, you could kind of write it off as, like, he had this kind of, like, it's all a dream.
Right.
It's such a powerful dream that it forced him to wake up and, like, reevaluate his entire life and all that stuff. Not so much in this one, because for one thing, the mice were there and seemed to remember the whole thing.
Are there the whole time, yeah.
You know, and then he's, like, looking back in the mirror and he sees himself with chains and he's like, oh, man, I gotta go do things. And it seems like, I don't know, just the way he's talking about it, it doesn't seem like he's, like, genuinely changed at the end of this movie. It just seems like, you know, he genuinely doesn't want to end up in chains.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't seem like he's empathetic towards people. It just seems like he's selfishly trying to not become part of the ghost army.
That's a very good point. Especially, I think, with the snowman, when he, like, the kid building the snowman, he, like, yells at him first, sees himself in chains, and then is like, oh, no, wait, and goes back out and tells him to buy a goose.
Exactly. So, I don't know. Is there anything else that stood out to you, Mike? What did you think of the song that Kate Winslet sings, What If?
Sure, I guess. If we've just had 75 minutes of no songs and then a song at the end.
Yeah.
So, It felt very weird. I don't know.
It was a very abruptly placed song. It was right after, I think, they kind of reconcile, but not, like, yeah, not quite. Like, they kind of, like, meet up for the first time after several years, and Belle is like, how could you destroy this children's hospital? And it's like, I didn't know I was doing that. Oh, hop, hop, hop. Yeah. And then it, like, cuts to a song as Belle is, like, walking through the streets. I like the song quite a bit. I thought the song was pretty good.
Yeah, it's a good enough song.
It's a solid ballad. I had no idea that Kate Winslet was a singer. And she was actually, yeah, she's actually quite good at it. Like, she was so that was a pleasant surprise, and that's, you know, one thing that this movie has to offer is that you can hear Kate Winslet singing. Which I don't think you can do outside of, like, Heavenly Creatures. That's the only other time I can think of Kate Winslet singing.
Yeah.
It makes me wish that she had sang the song for Titanic, actually. Because
that would have been awesome.
It might have been pretty cool. But anyway, yeah. Are there any other things in this movie that you wanted to talk about, Mike? Or should we wrap this up?
I think we could wrap it up. I think we're done.
Okay, yeah. I mean, Christmas Carol the movie, not so good. Not so good.
Not so hot.
Yeah, and there's not that much to talk about because it's Christmas Carol the movie. It's a 2001... It's, you know... It's an animated, crappy, direct-to-DVD Christmas Carol movie. It looks like, if you ever, did you ever watch The Nostalgia Critic by any chance, Mike? Like, did you ever see any of those? We might have watched some of those in my house. I haven't watched any in a few years, but I used to watch The Nostalgia Critic all the time when I was but a wee lad. And one thing that he used to review a lot, he had this, like, recurring thing where he would review animated Titanic movies went to direct-to-DVD or direct-to-video, like, right after James Cameron's Titanic came out.
Yeah.
And this reminded me a lot of those.
It did, yeah. It's definitely one of those kind of things.
Yeah, it was pretty rough. But anyway, let's move on from the movie, Mike. We both did not like it, and let's not harp on things we don't like, right? Let's try to embrace things that we do. And you know what we do like, Mike, is Netflix reviews.
We do, that's true.
Unfortunately, Netflix... does not have anywhere you can review this movie.
Tragic.
Because they don't offer on DVD and they don't offer it via streaming. So they don't even have, like, an entry for the movie. A lot of times what happens is that, you know, even if they don't have a movie on DVD, it'll have an entry for the movie on their site so that you can save it to your queue in case they do get it on DVD. And there you can review things.
Right.
Doesn't even have that for this movie. So instead of Netflix reviews, I have Amazon reviews.
Okay.
I went to Amazon. I got a few reviews. I'm not as big a fan of these as I am my Netflix reviews, but you know, we can make do with these Amazon reviews.
We'll settle
for it. Yeah. So I got a couple. Here is a 2-star Amazon review from for Christmas Carol the movie. Yeah, I'm a big Charles Dickens Christmas Carol fan, but this reimagining, quote unquote, rewrite smacks of hubris in the parts of everyone. From the treacly pop songs to the histrionic plot additions of Scrooge causing Tiny Tim's illness and holding the loan on his ex-girlfriend's husband to the dull, annoying mice who accompany Scrooge on his journey and hold completely incomprehensible conversations in high-pitched squeals. And finally, to the cheap animation, which looks even flatter and less appealing than Disney Channel knockoffs, this movie is a complete misfire from the get-go. For a better choice, look up the wonderfully atmospheric Chuck Jones 1971 animated cartoon of A Christmas Carol on YouTube. I think my favorite part about this review is that it seems genuinely concerned that the mouse's conversations were incomprehensible.
Yeah, yeah, we need to know what they're saying, Mike. They held the key to the whole movie.
They did. Apparently they did, according to the IMDb flat synopsis. They are the point of view character for the...
Yeah.
they are the Greek chorus that tells us what's going on.
Right.
In A Christmas Carol. Here's a 3-star review of Christmas Carol the movie. It really wasn't all that bad. If I had to choose between this and the Muppets version, it would be the Muppets hands down. What I really like about this adaptation is the dialogue. The interaction between the characters is lively, moving, and very well acted. I did not pay any attention to the technical aspects mentioned in the other reviews. An animation is an animation to me. I don't look for blowing hair or wrinkles in one's clothes. I tend to pay more attention to how well the movie is acted. That being said, I would not rate this one any higher than 3.5 stars, simply because the supporting cast does not hold the story up too well. It seems that the film is purposely centered around the main big-name Hollywood actors, Simon Callow, Nicolas Cage, and Kate Winslet. You know that big-name Hollywood actor, Simon Callow?
Yes, we could forget him.
The other characters are very obviously pushed into the smoldering background. I think what's interesting about this review is that, it completely disregards basically everything about this movie except for the voice cast.
You know, right. It says, the only thing that matters.
An animation is an animation to me. I don't need blowing hair or wrinkles in one's clothes. Like, that's not really what animation is. We're not looking for specific detail here. Yeah. We're just looking for, nice fluid animation. This movie doesn't really have that. Here's a 4-star review of Christmas Carol the movie, and this one is written in all capital letters. I am a sucker for animated Christmas carols. This was well done. Watch it every year. As good as many, better than some. Works well for the holidays.
Okay. that's an interesting take.
I mean, he knows what he likes. He's a sucker for animated Christmas carols. I like to imagine that's all he watches. Okay.
The only thing this person watches.
Just Christmas Carol movies nonstop, 365 days of the year. We should point out we are reviewing a Christmas movie in April.
Nothing stops us, Mike. Yeah,
but that's the way. We got to go. If we didn't review this movie, we would have to wait 8 months to review this movie. You know? And there wouldn't be any new podcast episodes. And what would you people do then without us?
Right? You'd be disappointed, Colin.
Exactly. Exactly. Now here's the last one. It's a 5-star review of Christmas Carol the movie. This is an older version of the Christmas Carol movie and is all animated. It's a very warm-hearted movie. I watch it even when it's not Christmas because it helps me want to do good to people all year round. The little mice that are in the movie are very endearing as well. Make sure you check who the voices are, because there is another movie with the same title starring Jim Carrey, but in my opinion is not well done at all. Kate Winslet and Simon Cowell are the... It says Simon Cowell. Kate Winslet and Simon Cowell are the main voices in this movie, and their voices are perfect for this part. So it says Simon Cowell, the American Idol judge. It means Simon Callow. which is weird. Those voices do sound very similar. I wonder if somebody listening to this podcast thought we were saying Simon Cowell this entire time and were wondering why we weren't mentioning that he was part of American Idol for so long.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible, I guess, right?
but I think what's interesting about this review is that it goes out of its way to throw the Jim Carrey 2009 Christmas Carol under the bus.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, a pretty good version of Christmas Carol. I don't know, have you seen that one?
I don't think I've seen that one, no. Okay.
That's one that was directed by Robert Zemeckis when he was in his weird mocap phase.
right.
And it's, it's not great, but I think it's a solid little Christmas Carol movie. And so Jim Carrey's playing Scrooge. I think he might play a couple other roles, too. I remember Gary Oldman is in that movie playing, like, 3 other roles, including Tiny Tim. Gary Oldman plays Tiny Tim. Gary Oldman plays Tiny Tim in the Robert Zemeckis Christmas Carol movie, and I think it's worth it just for that. I mean, it's...
Sounds like it.
Yeah, it's a motion capture performance, and I think they pitched his voice up so it sounds like a kid, so it's like... It's really, like, unrecognizable as Gary Oldman, but still, Gary Oldman plays Tiny Tim, and that's kind of neat.
Yeah, that's cool.
It doesn't have a theme song by Kate Winslet, though, so points off for that one.
So 2 of 10.
Yeah. We'll not see you again.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mike, so if you have any final thoughts about Christmas Carol the movie, if not...
I think we covered it pretty well. It's pretty run of the mill, kind of falls on the negative side a bit for both of us, I think.
Yep.
Cage is in it for 4 minutes, so
yeah.
So you got that going for you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean,
which is nice.
Yeah, I feel like it's been a long time since we've like barely had any Cage in a movie. So I forgot what it feels like to not be talking about Cage for most of the movie for most of the podcast. But anyways, Christmas Carol the movie, no good. Mike,
yeah.
Where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com, as well as some of my work at crookedscoreboard.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I am Mike Smith. That is Mike DeCrescio. If you are listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, you can subscribe to this podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. You can list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones, it's hard to keep track. And we would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks for another episode of The Complete Works, in which we'll be talking about Nicolas Cage re-teaming with director John Woo for 2002's Wind Talkers. Now, Mike, have you seen Wind Talkers at all?
I have seen it once. I don't remember it a whole lot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I've never seen Wind Talkers. I've heard it's not very good.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer because I love John Woo. But it's always the narrative surrounding John Woo is that kind of after Face Off, his American track record is pretty spotty.
Yeah.
You know, just because the studio has always like had fights with him about what he can do and cannot do. But this one should be interesting, to say the least, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Plus. You can keep an eye out for the next film bookcast, where this time it's not just about being fast. As we review The Fate of the Fucking Furious, my friend.
Oh man, it's scary how pumped you are for this movie.
I am pretty pumped. I'm pretty excited, and I've actually heard somewhat mixed things about this one, which is kind of upsetting. I don't know if you've seen any of the reviews of Fate of the Furious.
I don't think I have yet. No,
okay, the reviews have been there have been a lot of good reviews for this movie, but there have been others that are not very good, like others that have been bad. And like you for the past few Fast and Furious movies, the consensus has generally like been towards like really good, like, you know.
Yeah.
Critical reviews for 5, 6, and 7 have been like mostly pretty positive, and this one seems a lot more split down the middle. But the ones that like it a lot seem to like it a lot. Yeah, like the ones that like it seem to like it a lot, and the ones who dislike it have said it's like one of the worst ones in the series. So I think I will probably like it. Because what I want most out of these movies is insane action, and they generally deliver that in spades.
True.
So if it delivers on that, if it has, you know, if it's fun, that's what I want. I will say I did rewatch 5, 6, and 7 recently, and they're pretty great. They're pretty perfect. Especially 7. 7 is like, you know, action masterpiece.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I'm pretty excited about Fate of the Furious. I'll be seeing that tomorrow night, I think, actually. Pretty stoked. So yeah, we'll be reviewing that sometime next week. But thank you guys so much for listening, and thanks for getting in the cage. And still this question keeps on spinning in.